Welcome to episode 118 of Practical Defense, the U.S. Census. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. This week, our subject is the U.S. Census. I've received quite a few emails on this subject, and most people have honest concerns that I'll address. Others, I'll just say that some people should stay in their basements and keep those tinfoil hats on tight. It's best that you stay hidden so they won't get you. You know who I'm talking about and who I'm talking to. I've got your back. I'll read one email, which is a good example of the many that I've received. And here are the items that I want to cover this episode. First, there is a lot of crap floating around out there about the census, what you can and should do, and what's mandatory. I'll weigh in and give my opinion on those items. I'll also look at the questions themselves on the short form and analyze them for identity theft vulnerabilities. I'll review some scams associated with the census that are floating around out there. And finally, I'll go over some ways that you can distinguish an authorized census taker from a scam artist who might show on your doorstep or give you a call on the phone. So, we have a lengthy and packed episode this week with a lot of heavy material. So sit back, adjust your tinfoil hat so that it's comfortable, and enjoy. Welcome back, everybody. This episode is focused on an event that happens every 10 years in the United States. I know the show is downloaded in over 135 countries now, so I recognize that much of this episode won't apply to a fair percentage of our listeners. However, it is worth listening to, if for no other reason that it might provide some insight into similar procedures you might have in your own country. So to start, I'm going to give a little bit of background on the census. It was written into the U.S. Constitution in Article 1, Section 2, and I'll quote it here. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States and within every subsequent term of 10 years in such manner as they shall by law direct. Now the 14th Amendment, Section 2, modified the Constitution some. The changes are, and again here I quote, "Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed." So, in my layman interpretation, this means that every 10 years, the government counts every citizen in the United States for the purpose of ensuring that there are the proper number of congressional representatives. Now, the first few censuses were strictly about counting people. In 1820, some other questions slipped in regarding commerce. Over time, the questions grew to include questions of race, where people were born, and what they did for a living. All of the questions were rather innocent. The government was just trying to figure out who was living within its borders and what the population makeup was like. Remember that this was really the only way they could find this information out way back then. You know, for example, in 1930, the census included a lot of questions about unemployment. That made sense because it was during the Great Depression. Questions have always changed with the times. All right, we're done with the history lesson. Now let's read that email. This is from Miles. And he writes, "I received my census form in the mail, as did nearly all U.S. citizens this past week. There are all kinds of conspiracy theorists with tinfoil hats that are burning their brains these days about how the secret departments of the government are deliberately using the census as a means to develop lists for rounding us up and destroying our lives. Okay, maybe that's a little over the top, but government databases have been misplaced, laptops stolen, and may even be hacked. Although the census may be protected by law, that won't stop the crooks that hack the data and the database handlers that lose the data. And this forms with all the information is in the mail, and we just had a mail truck broken into while the postal worker was walking his route this past month. The news report said that the police suspect the motive was identity theft, as a box of letters was taken and the parcels were left. You're not a constitutional lawyer, and I would not ask you weigh in on what enumerate means or the questions that the Census Bureau can legally ask or not that would be outside the scope of your podcast. You are, however, a subject matter expert on databases and cybersecurity. Therefore, it is fair to ask you to provide a risk analysis of the questions that are on the census form. Would you look at the questions and then postulate, speculate, the risks that American citizens should be aware of based on those questions? What other risks do you think might be associated with the census that we should consider? One that I came up with is that my brother's mother-in-law lives with him. Therefore, his children's mother's maiden name is now associated directly with them, their address, and their birthdates on this form. That has got to be close to identifying information for financial accounts. Thanks, Miles. That is an excellent email and well written, by the way. I'll read the questions from my own copy of the 2000 census, which I received this week, and then we can do our analysis from there. So the first question is, how many people were living or staying in this house, apartment, or mobile home on April 1st, 2010? The second question, were there any additional people staying here April 1, 2010 that you did not include in question 1? Is this a house, apartment, or mobile home? What is your telephone number? Please provide information for each person living here. Then for each person, they want the following information. Their name, their sex, age and date of birth. This is an interesting question. Is this person Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin? Then they want the race. And then finally, does this person sometimes live somewhere else? That's it. Those are the 10 questions on the short form. And there are silver forms. They've got the short form, the long form, the home form, and then the business form. Sometimes an authorized census taker will physically show up on your doorstep to ask the questions in person. Now, looking at those questions, the only two that might be an issue for identity theft would be name and birthdate. The address is already printed on the form. Those three in combination might be used to mine some data about you, but it's really kind of tough. Now, Miles brings up that his brother's mother-in-law lives with him, so she will appear on the form as well. The concern there is that your mother's maiden name is often used as a security question, especially with banks. Now, for explanation, as a woman, your maiden name is your last name, family name, or surname, before you were married. It's the family that you were born into, and as such, should only be known to people close to you. However, it's been common practice in the United States to take your maiden name as your middle name when you get married. So here's an example that might help clarify this for the folks outside the United States. A girl is born, and she's given the name Nora Esther Avery. She grows up and meets a nice guy named Ralph Fernando Jacobs, and they get married. So now when Nora changes her surname to her husband's, she also changes her middle name to her family name. So after the marriage, she is now Nora Avery Jacobs. Nora is her first name, Avery is her maiden name, and Jacobs is her married surname. So Nora Esther Avery is now Nora Avery Jacobs. This was done to keep some sort of lineage in the name. So Miles' concern is that along with the family's names and birthdates on the census form, the wife's mother's maiden name will also be on the same form, and it's a valid concern. But fortunately, I don't think it poses a huge risk. I don't actually believe that any of the data on the census form is valuable enough to be stolen for use in identity theft. Now, if the census form data is combined with other data, which might also be in your mail, then there might be an issue. However, again, the census data by itself is not a huge risk. I'm going to do something here that I normally avoid doing. I'm going to get a bit political. So here goes. There is a ton of crap floating around about the census and what is legal and what you should do and should not do, and it has really pissed me off. You are required by law to complete the entire census form truthfully. There are a lot of conspiracy theorists out there saying that they will use this data to do bad things and that you're not legally required to provide any information other than just a basic count. I am amazed at how much traction these nut jobs are getting. The problem is there is just enough credibility in their arguments to make them sound plausible. There's also a lot of distrust of the government right now being fueled by some big news corporations. These extremists are capitalizing on that to gather followers. What I advocate doing is not following, but leading. Take nothing at face value and make up your own mind. Do not believe everything you hear and do your own research. Now, in my own research, I found an interesting bit of information that was disturbing. In the past, the census data has been misused for horrible things. During World War II, census data was used to identify people of Japanese descent, and those people were put into concentration camps. There are links to articles in the show notes on this. I have personally met a lady who was interred in one of these camps. I went to middle school with her daughter. I would like to say that I had dated her daughter, as I had a serious crush on her, but I was denied. So if this is the first time you've heard about these camps, and I've actually met people who've never heard this, go back and look at our history. Yes, the U.S. government rounded up American citizens in California, Oregon, and Washington and put them into concentration camps during World War II. Honest people who had done nothing wrong. Many lost their homes, their farms, and their entire livelihoods. It was pretty much a dark time for freedom in the United States. In the 1980s, the U.S. government officially apologized and paid, I think, over $1 billion in reparations. Now, also of note, the Canadian government also interred citizens of Japanese ancestry during World War II. So the U.S. wasn't alone, but that is by no means a justification. It's just an indication of the hysteria that was going on at the time. Since then, laws and bills have been enacted to prevent the data from ever being used in this manner again. Now, according to the Census Bureau website, and I'll quote here, Title 13 of the U.S. Code protects the confidentiality of all your information, and violating this law is a crime with severe penalties. In addition, other federal laws, including the Confidential Statistical Efficiency Act and the Privacy Act, reinforce these protections. Unquote. Does this change any of my views on the census? Here's my thought. If they are coming to get you, and you can select whomever they are from your personal list, the census records are not going to make or break anything. I have no problems filling it out, completely and truthfully. None whatsoever. So, now let's shift into what the real threats are when it comes to the census. Now, of course, I'm talking about scam artists. These are scumbags who will pose as representatives of the Census Bureau and try to get you to give up as much personal information as possible to steal from you. Now, just as a note, it is a federal offense for anyone to pretend they represent the U.S. Census Bureau or any other office of the United States government. But not that that's going to stop a scumbag. They already know and don't care. So first, let's go over how to identify a legitimate census taker. All census takers carry a badge with the Department of Commerce watermark and expiration date. The watermark is important because those are expensive and probably won't happen on a cheap knockoff. Some census workers might carry a U.S. Census Bureau bag as well. You may also ask the census taker for a picture ID from another source to confirm their identity. The census taker will provide you with a supervisor's contact information and/or the local census office phone number for verification, if asked. Now, I'll provide a link to all the regional census phone centers in the show notes. Although it's nice that they provide you a verification phone number, it's always best to look it up yourself and call from your own source. Now, depending upon the survey, the field representative or enumerator may carry a laptop or handheld computer bearing the insignia of the Census Bureau. The census taker will provide a copy of the notification letter you received or should have received in the mail describing the survey. So that's what the good guys look like. Now let's cover some of the scams, and we'll start with email, since it's the easiest. Quite plainly, the Census Bureau will not send an email asking for any information. If you get an email claiming to be from the Census and it's asking for detailed information, it's a fraud. Of course, standard email security measures apply. You never want to click on any of the links in the emails, and you never want to open up any attachments. The Census Bureau, on their website, was very clear saying that they will not use the internet to gather census data. Nice and easy, isn't it? Now, in addition to actually physically coming to your home, the Census Bureau might contact you by phone. So for personal interactions, here are some clues that you're dealing with a scam artist. Now, these are the bad things. The Census Bureau will never ask for your full Social Security number, ask for money or a donation. They will never send a request on the behalf of a political party. And they will never ask for things like PIN codes, passwords, access information for credit cards, your bank account numbers, or any other financial accounts. Now, if you're contacted over the phone, the call can originate from a local regional office or the National Processing Center. If for any reason that you doubt that the person on the phone is a census taker, ask for your case ID number and the center that they're calling from. End the call, and then contact the National Processing Center and verify that this person is legitimate. I'll include a link to the National Processing Center contact information in the show notes. Now, the U.S. Census Bureau is aware that people are concerned about scam artists and being able to verify that they're legitimate. So, they're expecting people to challenge and ask for ID. So, don't worry about it. They should be polite. They should be expecting it. They should have been trained to handle it. So, go ahead and ask for that ID. Verify who these people are. You should never blindly give up your information to anybody. And that should do it. We've read part of the U.S. Constitution. We've looked at some history around the census. We've discussed how the census is used and even how it has been misused in the past. We've discussed how to identify a legitimate census taker and how to identify the scam artists. After all that, you should be pretty well informed about the U.S. Census.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
So here is our summary of the census information. You are required by law to complete the entire census form truthfully. Mine's going out in the mail the first thing next week. In the past, census data has been misused for horrible things. But laws and bills have been enacted to prevent that data from ever being used in that manner again. The data in the U.S. Census, in of itself, is not a huge risk to you. It's only a significant risk if it's combined with other pieces of your personal information. All census takers carry a badge with the Department of Commerce watermark and an expiration date. You may ask a census taker for a picture ID from another source to confirm their identity. The census taker will provide a copy of the notification letter you received or should have received in the mail describing the survey. The Census Bureau will not send you an email asking for any information. And the Census Bureau will never ask for your full Social Security number, ask for money or a donation, send requests on behalf of a political party, or request PINs, passwords, or credit cards, or bank information, or other financial account numbers. If you're contacted over the phone and you suspect the person is not legitimate, you can call the National Processing Center and verify the person and the call. There are a ton of links to articles and general information pieces in the show notes this week, so stop by and check it out. And for those that don't know, the show notes are on my website at alexhaddix.com/podcast. Now, don't forget that we have a 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times magazine. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01, that's PRACDEF01, at checkout. The subscription to the print edition of the magazine includes digital copies. And you can find the promo code and a link in the show notes as well. If you have any tips you would like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.